Welcome to this week's episode of The Art of Authenticity. Thank you so much for joining. I'm Laura, your host. Today we have Matt Aaron joining us. Matt is the co-founder of Andy's Fruits in Colombia, and it's a company that ships exotic Colombian fruits to the United States. He is also the host of Food Startups Podcast. Matt came on today's show to chat with me about a subject that he felt needed to be unpacked, this question of money, pressure, and passion. All of us really want to make money. All of us want to follow our passion. But what does that mean? What does it mean for each of us individually? How much money is enough? What does it mean to have the passion in your life? Where's that balance between doing what you love, earning a living, being responsible? And this third thing of pressure. How much pressure can you take? How much pressure makes sense for your life? Because obviously, the more you're working, the more you're taking on, the more the pressure, anxiety, and stress builds up. So how do you manage it all? Matt had a bunch of thoughts on this and building his company, entrepreneurship. Really great show. I know you're going to enjoy listening. If you have any questions, you can reach out to me, Laura at lauraco.com. I love hearing from you. And thanks again for tuning in. Welcome to this week's episode of The Art of Authenticity. Today we have Matt Aaron joining us. Hey, Matt, how's it going?
I'm doing great. Living the dream.
There you go. Matt and I were just chatting before today's episode, and we have a really awesome topic that we want to dive into specifically that Matt brought to my attention. I thought you guys would love. But before we do, I just thought Matt could give us a little background, what he's been up to, what his story's been. So Matt, you know, I know I read your bio, but you were the co-founder of Andy's Fruits in Colombia. Can you tell us a little bit about your company and what inspired you to become an entrepreneur?
Sure. So two questions. What inspired me to become an entrepreneur, and then one on Andy's Fruits Colombia. So I'll start with the present. Andy's Fruits Colombia is a partnership between myself and a Belgian guy named Johan, where we ship exotic Colombian fruits, fresh produce, and dried, usually organic, to the United States. So our goal is to kind of spread the word about exotic Colombian fruits and share them with the U.S. market. And our main fruit right now is the golden berry, which many of you probably are not familiar with, but that's going to start to grow in the U.S. It's already pretty popular in Europe. And the golden berry is the cousin of tomatillo. It's like a tart, tangy superfruit. You can find it dried pretty much at any like health food store, but the fresh is just entering the market.
Nice. And I've actually heard of it a little, like it's kind of like tart, like a raisin almost, but like, but even tartar. Is that right?
It's one of those love or hate fruits. It's polarizing, right? So if you're into like sweet tarts, you're going to love it. Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
And so when did you start this business? How long has it been going?
So this business, and just to clarify it, fresh produce is a completely different world that I jumped into after doing dried and freeze-dried golden berries for about a year and a half, importing them to the United States. But teaming up with my partner, that started in our first shipment went out July 28th, 2015. So, you know, a year and 4 months.
Awesome. And what got you excited to be an entrepreneur? Is it been something a lot of entrepreneurs I talked to, they were like, well, when I was 12, I tried to start my first babysitting business. Is it something that you've always wanted to do, or did you come into it recently?
So yeah, I'm one of those guys that has like a bunch of like stories. And, you know, I remember even doing like garage sales when I was like 6 years old. I'll tell you a funny story, Laura.
Yeah.
I've never shared this before. When I was five, me and my best friend at the time, I said, let's have a yard sale. And I said, what are we going to sell? I said, marbles. And I told him, listen, let's sell them at $100,000 each, because if we sell 10 marbles, we'll have $1 million. And so I actually put a sign in front of my house. And for some reason, my parents didn't stop me. And cars drove by and they're like, oh, these kids, are they selling lemonade? No, marbles, $100,000 a piece. That was my first business. But
nice.
Yeah, I've had a lot of jobs when I was in high school and in college as well. And then I lasted about 7 months in not even the corporate world, like the small startup world. But when I was 23, I went on my own and I've been full-time entrepreneur ever since. What motivates me? Sometimes it's difficult to understand the subconscious intentions, but I think I like control over my life. I like freedom. And I think those are probably the driving energies behind it.
It's so funny. I just was watching Shark Tank and I heard Mark Cuban. He goes, entrepreneurs are the only people in the world that would give up 40 hours of work a week for 80 hours and call it freedom.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, it ends up being a lot of work to be an entrepreneur, but, and you kind of lose a lot of freedoms because you're working so many hours, but to just not have to check in or check out somewhere is worth it. I thought that was such a cute way of saying it. Awesome. So you then moved over to doing your fellow podcaster, the Food Startup Podcast. Can you tell me a little bit about the podcast and how you decided to venture into that?
Sure. The food, just to clarify, the Food Startups, plural, podcast?
Yes. Sorry.
No worries. So the reason I started that was in 2013. It's been 3 years now. Amazing. I started that because, and with my buddy at the time, who remains a great friend and has a chocolate company in Medellin, Colombia, who recently, you know, left the show about a year and a half ago because he was too busy. But him and I started it because we were like, wow, I come from a tech background. And in like coding and Google SEO, all that type of stuff, there is a tremendous amount of free and quality information in forums online that you can learn. But starting a food business, it's very opaque. It's old school. It favors the large companies, a lot of the quality control, organic certifications, import, export. And there's also a lot of people that are very successful, but they don't even know how to use Excel and they have a Hotmail email address. And So people that are like young millennials trying to get involved, there's not that much information out there. So I try to kind of create a place to hang out and bring in top performers, people that are, you know, in various cycles of the food startups world, authors, et cetera, and kind of just share that and create a little bit of transparency in the community and democratize the information.
It is interesting. There's certain sectors where it really is still so old school. I was in the healthcare sector and, you know, doctor's offices and labs and all that stuff. It's amazing. There was 350,000 tests flown every night in the business that we sold our company to. And you would think there'd be this incredible system behind it. And it was like taped together. It was unbelievable. I mean, when you say Hotmail accounts, it literally makes me think of the whole company.
A good litmus test, like for an industry, if they're using like a fax machine more than once per month, it's probably old school.
Yeah. No, I mean, like they didn't even have a centralized IT system. I mean, it was amazing. Just taped together. You just don't believe that's really possible anymore with everything you see on the internet. But so many industries are still pretty old school. And so have you found that bringing these people on, they're sharing their information about the food industry has helped you grow your business? And second question, has helped people starting their own food businesses find a way to do it in a new modern style?
Yes and yes. It's so cool. I'll first thought the coolest thing, well, actually definitely the coolest thing for sure is when people are like, hey, I really enjoy your show. Because it's a lot of work putting one out every week. And there's a lot, you have to face, it's great. You have to be very authentic, face a lot of self-doubt, hearing your voice. You know, not every episode is going to be amazing. There's going to be production, audio quality issues, but at the core, delivering value and getting that feedback really feels great. And now I feel like I have a community. I have people that I regularly talk to, and it's so cool that I've connected guests on the show that are working together on projects. And yeah, I'm incredibly grateful for that.
That's awesome. Well, I want to like jump in because most of the people who reach out to me want to come on the show, you know, they have something that they're promoting and I'm sort of pushing you to tell us about your story and everything. But in truth, you had a really cool agenda when you reached out. You were like, I just want to talk about money pressure and passion. So I just want to dive in here because I think that's so awesome that you came with such a specific conversation that was on your mind. Obviously, the show is about creating a life that's successful and meaningful. And this is a question of like, money and passion, right? How does that all work? So can you tell me, you know, what was on your mind when you reached out with this particular subject?
Sure. So I went to your show. I started out with Sebastian and Carlos, and I wanted to think of, you know, how could I add value to the show? Because, you know, I wanted to be part and expose myself to your audience. Not, doesn't sound so good, expose myself to your audience, but you know, like I want to like, you know what I mean? Like
nothing
I want your
sorted
audience to know who I am and especially if they're in food, it would be great. But regardless though, I chose the topic and actually I have to put one more disclaimer for the audience here. So I'm not coming to you with the answer for this because this is something I've worked on for 5 years and I've gotten so close the last couple months and I feel like I'm in a good spot with my relationship to this. And as you know, Laura, this is, you never make it, right? So you can have an amazing startup, sell it, and then all of a sudden, 6 months or even 6 days, your life can be turned upside down. Mm-hmm. But what I'd like to listeners to come out of the episode with is, what are the questions that can be asked? And also some concepts to consider that can get you to your personal answer, because it's different for everybody. We're all different and we have different chemical levels in the brain and interests, et cetera, et cetera. So the reason is, I think these are like money, pressure, and passion. Money and passion, these are two sources of anxiety, you know, stress, anxiety, as well as pleasure for people that are trying to live an authentic life.
Interesting. So anxiety, stress, and pleasure. So, right, because you're working towards your passion, you're making money, but then what, this causes stress and pleasure at the same time? Is that what you're getting?
Well, let's break it down a little bit. Let's start with money. So money and passion. Let's just start the money. Okay, so it's like I work in like healthcare doing some type of consulting and I make 10 grand a month. I love art. So should I stop my healthcare business and do art full time? Because art's my passion, but I don't make any money. In fact, it costs me money to buy the art supplies.
Yeah.
Right. So that's one example. What's another common one? Another common one.
Oh, so how do you balance
it? Yeah. How do you balance all that? And also how do you find that? But also like the pressure comes in. The pressure is interesting because all of a sudden I started my own business. I'm doing my art. I believe in this full time. But is that responsible? You know, maybe you have a family or other people that you want to look out to. And so how does all of this fit together?
Right. So how do you think about this? Because the question of how do I think about money and what does money mean for me and when is enough enough and how much passion is critical for me in my job versus in my life? And we think of these things in such, I think, really basic terms, you know, like make money. Well, I never said, well, here's the dollar figure that I need to make. And then I feel pretty comfortable. I never define that, right? I want passion in my life. Well, how much passion, right? Like, because no matter what you do, I love what I'm doing, but there's a bunch of stuff that's grunt work. So how do you start to walk through that? Do you have thoughts on how to approach those subjects?
Sure. Let's start off with the passion. And I want to dispel There's some exceptions here. Like any good rule, it can be broken by certain people. And I think of like the artist that was drawing from like 6 years old and they continued. But and I got this from Cal Newport, which I would imagine a lot of listeners know. The whole idea of like this intellectually thinking about what your passion is and like just thinking about it, it's like, what's my passion? I'm going to do it. Not going to work. Much more likely to work is you try different things. Some you like, some you don't. You get good at something. And what you get good at or something you have an interest in, that you'll probably start liking it and that will become your passion. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. But there's like that one tricky thing where you're really good at something and you don't like it.
Okay. So then if that happens, then it's not your passion. But I would say, and tell me if you agree, I think you're more likely to be good at things you're passionate about or be great at things you're passionate about for sure.
I think that's the real question, right? Like, is there a ceiling on your interest and your motivation to continue to grow and, you know, develop? Because I was really good at healthcare tech entrepreneurship, but I actually had no passion for the product. And so I was doing really well in a bunch of areas and continuing to grow, but there was a piece that I just couldn't get myself to. So yeah, I think absolutely the things that you are driven towards and you feel excited by, you tend to get more talented at. What about the person though that is driving towards it because they just think, well, I just want to buy another Bentley or something?
Well, I mean, it's probably not going to work out. It's interesting. I was just in the Miami area and I was around some of those people where, you know, they have on the money side, they're much more successful than me and they have like Bentleys and so forth. And I'm not judging them, but it seemed like they were kind of like toys. That was like a side effect of having business success. But if they weren't passionate about the business that they were spending 80 hours a week on, you could tell they were lacking in other areas of their life.
Yeah. Yeah. So how do you start to balance these things and deal with how much money do you really want and how much pressure are you willing to also take on, right? Because the more you're working, the more money you're making, but you also, what about your family?
Sure. So I think one answer is, and I've had people on my show, like the founder of Honest Tea, he had a family, but he's like, I have to go all in. So the answer to this, Laura, it, it's, again, there's no right answers. You have to understand who you are, and you can test this. And we'll talk about that in a second. But the Honest Tea founder, Seth Goldman, right, who got bought by Coca-Cola, blah, blah, blah. He had to go all in, because he's like, if I didn't go all in, I don't know. I wouldn't have the motivation to do it. But other people go all in and they're crushed by the pressure. They're paralyzed by it, and they feel all this type of stress. So I think you can always start off keeping your job and doing something on the side. I think that's most likely the best way to start out. But then energy wise, you might hit a point where you're just really feeling it, and you know that just like procrastination, like soul crushing, when you start thinking about that job that pays your bills and you have a little bit of a runway. But you're like, oh my gosh, I don't want to do the weekly call for my healthcare tech company. Or you wake up and you have a great morning, Laura. And I don't know, you have, breakfast with your husband or your wife, you go for a walk, and everything's good. And you're like, oh man, at 4 p.m., we have that weekly status call, and like your body language changes, you like shrink. It's like, that might be the time, to leave.
That's right. That's right. So was this part of your journey? Like, how do you think about balancing money and passion in your business, in your podcast?
Sure. So it's definitely been a source of stress over the years, because, wow, there's no guarantees in what I'm doing. And there has to be a little bit of blind faith. And it's quite difficult, because I'm like the only guy that has I have a couple of friends kind of, but I'm the only person that does podcasting that has exotic fruits from Colombia. There's not like, it's not like following like a lawyer where you can start a law firm.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm kind of even going to uncharted territories, because my business partner, who also has a company in Europe that's successful, right, but he's sold to Europe, and So it's like that, those are the type of things that I have to deal with. And so I would say, Laura, I want to stop for 1 second here on the pressure, because I mentioned pressure tests, and this will relate to what we're talking about. I had to take a leap of faith and basically take on the debt of a container of fruit, which is worth $80,000, that more than doubled what I had in my bank account last year. And I went through that stress of having like a huge debt and trying to sell on that. And I learned a lot about myself. So how do I balance that? I made it through, and that decision kind of changed everything, because that was what built trust with my current business partner, who's much more established than I am, to give me, and this was with dried fruit, to give me a chance with the fresh golden berries. So if I didn't take that chance, it would not have worked out.
And how did you balance like that pressure, like and that passion to do it? Was it a moment where you just said, I'm doing it? Or was it a process where you sat down and really journaled for a couple months? Like, what did that look like for you?
Sure. A combination of journaling, meeting up with friends. I do a lot of masterminds. So masterminding where we share our life and like share, and it's like, should I do it? And I got enough like pluses. And then at one moment I was in rural Pennsylvania. I had gone up to meet this ukulele teacher, this legend in Boyertown, Pennsylvania. And I met up with my buddy, and he like drove down. We're like, let's meet up for the night and hang out. And I told it to him. And I remember right there, he told it to me. I was like, yeah, like, kind of that bravado, like, life is short. It's time to go all in. Like, enough. Like, this is it. Like, has my talent level, you have to act before you're ready. But I think my talent level got to a point where experience, where it's worth trying. And I'm in a spot right now where like things have leveled out, and now our business is growing. But I can actually, by taking on investment, I can enter that space again. And almost like just like chilling in Florida last week and relaxing, I kind of learned, I was, okay, you can't always be in that state, like the pressure, like you owe like a lot of money or have a huge responsibility all the time. So it's like ebbs and floats, but I can handle it for, sustained period, especially if I go through like a relaxation period. In fact, Laura, Sebastian and I are both close friends with Shanna Mann, who I think you should know, and she's a coach as well. And Shanna's my coach. She's been my coach for 4 or 5 years. And so after I sold that container, Laura, I was like, this is my email. I'm going to send you a screenshot of the email. I said, hey, Shanna. So, and I'm like very obsessed with like self-development, et cetera, et cetera. I said, Shanna, the last 3 days, I've just been lying in my bed watching Netflix. And I love it. I love the wind shades like closed off from the world. I was like, but like, I need to get back into it. I need to like get the, health, blah, 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 business. And she's like, Matt, just like ride this out. This is good. This is like an important period of like downtime in your life.
Yeah. And I love too, like full circle to what we were talking about a few minutes ago, it's what works for you, right? If like there becomes a moment where it is critical to your, you know, constitution to go get in bed and watch Netflix for three straight days, so be it, right? Like I had Dr. Shefali on the show who's, you know, been on Oprah now three times, and you look at her and you think, oh my God, she's probably like going. And she's like, no, I just spent 3 weeks. I went off the grid completely and I didn't even answer an email. So I think this myth that, you know, you just keep going, and this idea of heads down and just, you know, pounding through, nobody can live their life in that kind of way. I mean, there are a handful of people. I know one guy, he's insanely successful. He's got like a several billion-dollar fund, but I've known him since high school and he never needed more than 4 hours of sleep, right? So it's like, you have to take these kind of superhumans and put them aside and say, what works for me, and stop looking to other people for your model. I think we can share in ideas and different ways of looking at the world, but I love that you're like, I'm just going to get in bed and watch some Netflix because that's what I need at this point, right? And did that give you the motivation to kind of pop back out and feel more energized for the next phase?
Yeah, and I'm in that phase now. And we just had our annual trade show, which for our industry is like, it's like the Super Bowl of produce. And I saw the year-on-year growth and had a really good perspective where we're at. And now, and this is where like the pressure comes in, right? I have some money now, not a ton, right? But is it time to go for that next level, which involves a little bit more pressure that you'd have to channel going forward? And the answer is yes, and I'll tell you why. But it's interesting to feel that. And on the power of downtime as well, one more thing, Laura, with downtime is when you turn off your phone for 24 hours or even 48 hours. And Laura, it's really funny, my coach Shanna, we'll have to link her in the show notes. She's great as well. And she was like, one thing she told me, and Sebastian told me this as well. They're like, Matt, here's what you need to do. When I was at a state of flux and journaling, I found to be very effective. But they said, Matt, you need to go to a cafe for like 3 hours with just a notebook and a pen, no cell phone, and like journal about this one thing. And then Shanna put in parentheses, which you probably can't do. And I was like, oh, which I probably can't do. It took me like 3 months. And I even remember sending her an email. I was like, hey, Shannon, just let you know, tomorrow, like Saturday, I'm going to this cafe. I'm going to do it. And then like after 6 weeks, I finally made it. And I did it for an hour and a half. And then I checked my phone. And after 3 months, I actually did do it.
What do you mean? You couldn't do it because sitting for 3 hours is just too painful to do?
Is that so, Laura, So digital discipline is a big thing in my life that I haven't tackled, but you've probably noticed with the younger generation, they're always on their phones and the stimulus of information and the internet. So for me to sit in a cafe with no internet, no phone, just a pen and a paper for 3 hours, I would get anxious and I couldn't finish.
Yeah. I have to say I'm 45. My friends, we all started off, you know, pre-internet, pre-cell phones, but everybody's got a bad case of it now. I mean, it's like you get fidgety and anxious because you feel like you need to like touch some kind of electronic. It's pretty crazy. So you finally did it. You sat down, you did 3.5 hours. How did it feel when you got to the end?
Oh, it felt great. To be honest, I can't even remember what I came out of with that information because I do a lot of journaling, but I remember coming out of it. I felt a lot more clarity. It was primarily focused on the podcast, but a lot of clarity coming out. And one thing I want to say about journaling and growth in general, a lot of times you may not be able to consciously realize your growth, but you've gained like food entrepreneurship. You know, you might have like 130 soft skills, like just how to recognize when not to work with a person, et cetera, that you have, but you can't even like write them down on paper. And so coming out of that, I think that got me in the habit of journaling. Cause it was probably like 4 or 5 months ago where now I can get that stimulus reward, that reward from journaling and downtime, and I can come out with big ideas. And the fact that I'm speaking with you about this, when I go into a hyper-connected state, meaning, you know, touching emails twice, looking, starting the day reactive, like starting the day with email, things like that, I think I'll remember, wow, it's time to shut everything off. And I can feel now inside that I'm going to get like guidance in the inevitable obstacles that will come in my path going in the future.
Yeah, it's a really interesting thing to consider. And so when you think going forward now with your podcast and your business, what are your plans, and how do you continually think of how to balance these components in your future goals.
So Laura, okay, I want to mention one thing, and this is a concept that I had about 3 years ago. I'm 32, so I had this when I was about 29. And what tends to happen if you take the off-beaten path is you compare yourself to your friends, not from a point of jealousy, but from a sense of fear, at least in my case. Like, I'm happy that some of my friends back home are doing great. But I was like, but when you see like, wow, like 2014, like I made minimum wage, or it's like 100,000, 105,000 in revenue and then costs like 96,000.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I made $7,000 last year. And like, I worked a ton, and it's like, and it really checks your fear. So I think about like rock climbing, or if you have fear of heights, like don't look down, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So it's,
yeah.
I kind of got into that, just like, Matt, just be in your space.
But don't you think so few people in entrepreneurship set you up for this one piece? And I should probably say this constantly every chance I can, that even when you're a successful entrepreneur, it doesn't mean that you have profits to take home because you're reinvesting into the business. And so I went through a phase too. My friends were all making money and they started making more and more and more, and they were getting raises and I was happy for them. But I'm like, damn, I'm still making 30,000, right? But I have this big business. It can be humbling in that moment, right? Or you think, what am I doing wrong?
Oh, humbling. Yeah, great word. Been humbled a lot of time. And Laura, I'll say one thing. One is the survivorship bias, right? Like Elon Musk, Mark Zuckerberg. So not only people that survive that keep their businesses going, right? The 5 to 10% that even have success with their startup, and then the top 0.001% that get all the attention, right? So there's like the survivorship bias.
Yeah, yeah.
And then two is here's a great question. So in the entrepreneurial space, it's usually like, how big is your business? Like, how big is it? Right. But a better question, and I got this, I can't from some other author, I can't remember, but if I do, I'll send it to you, but it should be, how healthy is your business? And that's not, so it's like, you know, profit margin, but like overall, like, how are you connecting with your employees, with your customers? Like, so I think a better question to ask is, how healthy, not how big is your business? Because like a $1 million funding round doesn't really mean anything. That just means you're taking on like $1 million of someone else's money. It's time to like double down.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, the beginning phase, trying to get money, trying to figure out the product, trying to figure out if there's a market, it's all really difficult. And I applaud anybody for trying to do it. But getting from there to profits is a whole other world. Having employees, dealing with 10 employees, going from 10 employees to 30 employees, you know, that's right. Like those are the questions you should be asking. Am I building a sustainable, solid foundation of a business that can grow for 10, 20 years? Or is it really just a house of cards?
Yeah. And being honest with yourself helps. And so I have my notes here because I went over your questions before the interview, Laura. And so I'm going to enter and define authenticity so it took me a while to come up with this. And the way I define authenticity is awareness, seeing things for what they are.
Yes. Yes. So seeing things for what they are, like that you're being truthful with yourself.
Yeah. And just saying like, oh, I have this like business, and being honest with your motivations. Like, I'm doing this business because it makes a lot of money and it gets me a lot of Facebook likes, or I'm just making an example here, but being truly, truly honest, because there's a lot of businesses that like say they're like socially responsible, but that's not why they're doing it. So they say that on their about page, and I don't say that it's wrong, but and the brain can be very tricky. You can rationalize a lot of decisions, but the closer you get to understanding, like seeing things for what they are, the more power you have. I got to bring this in now. So this is the quote, and from 50 Cent and Carlson. I love the 50th law by 50 Cent and Robert Greene. And so this is a quote by 50 Cent, and I'm going to read it here now, that relates to this. And so it's really powerful for me. And so here we go.
Yeah.
Reality is my drug. The more I have of it, the more power I get, and the higher I feel.
I love that. I love that. Right. Very beautiful.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's beautiful. And it's interesting because I've noticed a lot of people judge 50 Cent because of some of the messages in his music, but an incredibly sharp person and amazing entrepreneur. Like, he invests in vitamin water, some other companies as well.
You mentioned the authentic life and what it means to you, but was your path to having an authentic life one that started young, or did you have like a big turning point moment where you felt you were in a deeply inauthentic place and had to make a change?
growing up, I was like a gifted and talented kid, and I was in the fixed mindset, not growth mindset. So I was not really into school at all. Minimum viable work, you know, and I didn't really start thinking about self-development until I was like 25. And I think I was like 25, 26 when I moved to Columbia. And it all changed when I started reading. So that was the moment I got into books. And I think Ryan Holiday's blog, and I was reading Ryan Holiday when he was like 20 or 21 years old. He's like 30, 31 now. He's about to have a kid.
Yeah.
And I remember reading his stuff. And that was probably a big life-changing point. And the second life-changing point was – so I got into it, but there's different levels. It's not like you can get advice from a top performer, as you know, and then all of a sudden you live out that advice. It takes a while to get there, right? It takes a lot of self-doubt and you know, homeostasis, right? You're going to have these poor habits. You're not going to root them out. And it's taken years to root out a lot of habits. And I have, you know, I've made a lot of progress and still plenty to improve.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the second point was when I turned 29, I read The Guy by Sebastian Marshall. And I read that book, Laura, and it's just like, I was like, first off, wow, Sebastian Marshall, really interesting guy, as we both know. And it's a episode on Laura's podcast, which everyone should listen to. And so very, very unique person that you can learn from. And he's not like everybody, but he teaches you a lot. And then so after reading that, Laura, I got like hyper obsessed with like self-improvement. If I'm waiting any line, I'm listening to an audiobook, like not wasting a moment. Mm-hmm. And I did that for a while. And I had to kind of dial it back because, you know, that's just not me. That's just not how I'm built. But I still like read a ton and so forth. And I love audiobooks. But I just kind of had to balance that out.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it can become extreme. And all of a sudden, it's like you're just consuming it. And it's really about taking these ideas and bringing them into your life. And it can, you know, too much of it can feel a little crazy. So when you're facing like a stressful moment and things get really intense, and we talked about an example with your business, what do you do to, you mentioned you talked to a bunch of friends, you tried journaling, you know, to not make that inauthentic decision.
Yeah. So let me give you my last stressful moment and I'll walk you through it because I've gotten better at that. I've had times where I just like go crazy and send like an email, like pure impulse, right?
Right. Those are
I think I've probably had natural impulsive tendencies, like I like gambling, right? So I've gone through that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Not the best look. Yeah. And the more you like stress out, the worse it gets. So just like being able to calm yourself and understand it. So here's the story. This was Sunday night. Today is Wednesday. Sunday night, Laura. I'm in Florida, flying back to Columbia Monday at like 8 a.m. and I'm 3 hours from the airport. So meaning I get back like Sunday night at 1 a.m. with my buddy from his car. And I'm going to have to drive in about 2 hours from like at 3 a.m. I'm going to have to drive, return the car, fly to Columbia. So we get back to his place and we park. And I look to the side and I see the rental car and there's like this huge dent in it. And I was like, wait, that can't be my car. And sure enough, it's my car. So I'm like, okay, it's a very quick situation because I only have a couple hours here, right? So option A is just take off, return the car. I don't have car insurance. I do have the collision damage, whatever. I could decline that and I have it like the Visa or MasterCard, but I don't know about this stuff. And I always have this fear with insurance, like they're going to find some way or I'm not going to do something right. And then I just kind of like took a deep breath. I was all right, well, you got to laugh at this. And then I also thought, because it was just such a meaningful trip with my buddy and spending time with him, who ironically, he was the guy, the last person I was with when I made that decision to take on that container of dried fruit, the huge debt. And I said, wow, dude, you know, even if I have to pay $4,000, which still hurts to say that, if I have to pay $4,000 for this dent, this was like an amazing vacation. I'm so glad we got to hang out.
Right.
And like, I really felt that.
Yeah.
But then he's like, yeah. And then he's like, and then we started thinking about it. So talking to a friend, he's like, okay, here's what you need to do. You need to delay your flight. I wanted to get back to Columbia. It's like, delay your flight a day. So I basically, JetBlue, and thank you so much, JetBlue, for waiving the change fee after hearing my story. So call JetBlue. And then call JetBlue and then call the rental car company to extend for a day. Give myself 24 hours, right? And like go to bed and then figure it out in the morning. And then just going through the logic, you know, do I need a police report? What should I tell? I'm always hesitant to tell like insurance companies. Like I don't want to tell them anything because it's like they can always use it against you.
Right.
But anyway, I bought myself time, 24 hours to figure it out. And I feel like I'm in pretty good shape and I'll be able to file the claim this week and hopefully get it back. But Laura, if it doesn't work out, I know that my strategy was good and, you know, I accept that.
Yeah. Very cool. No, it's
so it's really like talking to friends and just trying to calm down and think with logic, because when you're charged with emotion, that's when you have the least amount of logic.
Absolutely. And it's like, there's nothing wrong with emotions, but just try not to take major serious actions. You know, everybody's had that email where it's like you having a big emotional spurt or you're pissed off and you hit send and it's like, oh no, I want to take that back and it's gone, right? So yeah, just trying to refrain from big actions. So now that you're in a place of authenticity and success in your life, what are your daily practices or habits to stay authentic? You mentioned journaling. What else do you do to, do you meditate? Do you go for long walks? What else do you do to stay in a good space?
I do a combination of things and I'm not perfect. I break some of these habits. I like going for long walks. There's a mountain near my house that I can climb, like hike. It's not like mountain climbing. I like journaling. I like the 5-minute journal. So I'm just going to name a bunch of things I do. I like awesome. Reading. I almost every Wednesday I have like go to this cafe and I tell like a lot of my friends in Bogota, I'm like, I'm just going to be at this cafe 4 to 6 writing and reading. Besides that, those are the things that come to top of mind. I also like to exercise, like swimming or gym, et cetera, et cetera.
I love that. I love having a Wednesday date with yourself to write and read. What a fun thing to do. Well, Matt, thank you so much for coming on today's show. I think your story and your ideas will resonate with a lot of people. If people are looking to hear more about you, find out about you, where can they find you?
Yeah, the easiest way is if you go to foodstartupspodcast.com. I'm sure this will be linked in the show notes, fellow podcaster here, and click on the contact page. Send me a message. And I'll tell you, the listeners, if you can like give me your situation, right? You know, I'm not an expert. Like I said, this was just about the right questions. Send me what it is. I can give you my 2 cents to consider. And also, I've read probably since 25 in the last like 7 years, I've probably read 400 to 500 books. So I think I can give you, you know, 1 to 10 really good book recommendations that you could read and that could maybe help.
And all 400 of those books, are they all self-help or do you go
off? No, I love that's, I have an insecurity about this because I like when people are like, when I tell them, they're like, oh, I love this Russian author, but you probably just read business books. I'm like, no, I read all sorts of books. So I love philosophy. History. Bastian got me into history, to be honest, and Ryan Holiday. I like biographies, self-help, psychology.
What was your favorite book in the last couple months?
Ooh, great question. Maybe Status Anxiety by Alain de Botton.
Very cool. Awesome, Matt. Thank you so much for coming on today's show.
Oh, yeah. And hold on. I just want to say one thing that's really interesting from Status Anxiety. Okay. So the formula in there for self-esteem, right? Because I think authenticity, it's hard to be authentic with low self-esteem. Feel free to argue that, but I feel that way. And so the formula for self-esteem is success divided by pretension.
Success divided by pretension. Interesting.
Pretension. Yeah. So because think of all the like Robin Williams who tragically passed away. So it's you can be really successful but unhappy as you kind of alluded to. And I feel like that's like a shortcut for self-esteem.
Very, very cool. I'll have to check that book out. I have not read that one. All right, Matt. Well, thank you very much for coming on today's show. And for anybody interested, check out Matt at foodstartupspodcast.com.
Thank you so much, Laura. I'm so happy to know you, first of all, and two, to be on the show.
Thank you.